Welcome to the Diet Doctor Podcast with Dr. Brett Scher. Today I'm joined by Dr. Joseph Anton from El Nutra, and I've got to look at my notes here to tell you about all of his degrees and his whole introduction. He got his MD and his master's degree from St. Joseph University. He finished his degrees in public policy and public health at Harvard and Johns Hopkins. He's the CEO of Health Systems Reforms. He's the co-director of the Center for Health Policy at the University of Chicago. He's a professor of health at the Buck Institute for Research in Aging, and he's the CEO of El Nutra. Now, that's quite a pedigree on Dr. Joseph here. We have a fascinating discussion about fasting, and fasting is such a hot topic right now. But what exactly does it mean? There's intermittent fasting, there's time-restricted eating, there's short-term fasting and long-term fasting. So what do they mean, and what do they mean for you as an individual? Where are you going to get your biggest bang for your buck, so to speak? Because we all want the maximum amount of benefit for the least amount of effort. And when it comes to fasting, it's a little confusing. People are throwing around terms like mTOR and AMP kinase and PKA, and we want to know what this means for our health, whether it's for treating diseases, preventing diseases, promoting longevity in our health span, and we get into all of that with Dr. Joseph today. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. It's a hot topic that touches everybody. It's something everybody can do today to help improve their health. So thanks for listening. If you want to learn more, you can go to dietdoctor.com, find more about me at lowcarbcardiologist.com, and about Dr. Joseph Anton at lnutra.com. Thanks again, and enjoy this interview. Thank you so much for joining us at the Diet Doctor Podcast.
Thanks for having me today.
So here we are at the Mindshare Summit, and this is a great event. And you were on stage yesterday presenting on the future of health, and you were presenting on fasting.
Yes.
Now, I'd say they're probably a few years too late to talk about the future of fasting. It seems like fasting is here.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, now you're a doctor, you have your medical degree, but you went into business and then found your way to El Nutra, this company producing a fasting mimicking diet. So I'm curious, give us a little background on your progression and how you got to this point.
Yeah, it all started when I was doing my rotations in med school, and I found out that the healthcare we were giving was not ideal. I was frustrated with two things. Number one, we were not giving solutions that heal the body. We were trying to diagnose a symptom, or identify a symptom, trying to find the reason for it, and then which disease, and then give a pill or give a medical or a surgical treatment. We were not doing anything to keep people healthier longer. And the second call was, there was a little bit of discrimination whether you have the ability to pay, whether you can access the best medication or the most expensive one or not. That kind of created a frustration in me, and I wanted to really go out and help changing the healthcare systems around the world into giving fair access to medicine and to healthcare, regardless of the ability to pay, but also to bring a big innovation in healthcare that keep people healthier longer rather than sicker longer.
Yeah, so I guess you have sort of two different ways you're approaching this. One is from the healthcare reform side, which you're very involved in, and the second is with the innovation of a fasting product, the fasting mimicking diet. So what specifically drew you to fasting as the path to help people with their health?
Yeah, so the first thing in my journey when I finished my med school is I went into health policy and public health studies. I did my health policy at Harvard, then I did my health my public health at Hopkins, and wanted to start a career in really finding what is the next big thing that's going to heal or prevent a disease for billions of people around the world. And the first path in this journey, and a lot of professors and advisors said, well, first learn the biotech sector, learn how we discover, how we bring new innovation in healthcare. So I joined a company called Eli Lilly and Company, or mainly known as Lilly for most people. And this is what I learned the business of, how you innovate, how you launch product, and how you make them accessible to people around the world. And after that journey, I still, my second hunger, which was for something that would really change the world, I was looking for something like that. And I actually met a CEO of a company called the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. And he asked me a question that changed my life. And the question he asked me was, he said, Dr. Anton, as an expert in health policy and public health, why the healthcare system still treats or think about the top four killers today as if they're completely independent, meaning Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer. saying, why you still treat them independently? I was like, what do you mean? They're completely independent diseases. And he said, if we're really independent, why you don't get Alzheimer's at age 20? Why you don't get your first cardiovascular or heart attack at age 22? You actually get most of these diseases at later stage in life. So the mother of these diseases is really aging, and the way you age and the quality at which you age determines the onset of these diseases. And so he said, for an ideal public health system to really keep people healthier longer, the system should focus on how we age. And if we help right. people age healthier longer, then we're pushing the onset of these chronic diseases to later stage in life. And that was a fascinating statement for me. And I started looking into aging as a field, and I started to look into, are there technologies, is there research in aging that's bringing any product or any service?
So how long ago was
that? To the market. That was almost 7 years ago today.
7 years, okay.
And my big search, I started traveling the U.S. looking for a lab or looking for a technology in aging, because I knew how the healthcare system worked. I knew how reimbursement and policy works. And you need a service, you need a product for them to consider and then to reimburse or to price and create a track for it. And aging up until today is not recognized as, I mean, it's a physiological, natural process, but it is a driver of a lot of diseases. So even with the FDA, we don't have a track for aging to reimburse a technology for aging or even to approve it. And I started looking around and traveling across the U.S. trying to find any intervention that can help us age healthier. And everyone was pointing actually at the University of Southern California, and specifically at the leader of the health of the Longevity Institute over there. His name is Professor Walter Longo. And he kind of, you know, spent all his life working on understanding how we age and then how we can slow down or the pace of aging or optimize the quality of aging. And one of his big discovery was that fasting could be a very impactful way to slow down biological aging. So we took a trip, we met in San Francisco, Walter and I, Professor Longo, along with Brian Kennedy, the CEO of the Buck Institute. And it was an unbelievable meeting where the three of us allied and decided to bring fasting to the market and launch a market around fasting and aging, which didn't exist at that time.
Yeah, that was a fateful day for sure.
Yeah.
So the joke around fasting, though, is how do you build a business around telling people not to eat anything? So,
yeah, this is
that's the joke. Right? You can't sell anything. You're taking things away. So for that reason, it almost seems like nobody wants to research it. Nobody wants to promote it. But then you have groups like Jason Fung and Megan Ramos up in Canada with the Intensive Dietary Management Program having great success with fasting. Yeah. And you sort of took another approach of saying, let's give food so people aren't completely fasting, but food that mimics a fast. And then you have some science behind this as well. So lead us through the science a little bit of what you have to back up.
I mean, fasting is critical actually to balance our life and the way we age. You know, if you think about it, humanity lived with fasting for hundreds of thousands of years. It was imposed on us because food was scarce. And think about it, a million years ago or 300,000 years ago, when we didn't have readily food available, we didn't have refrigeration and a supply chain of food. So fasting lived, you know, our ancestors had to search for food, and it wasn't always available, especially in winter times and difficult times and war times. So fasting lived with us for such a long period that it became part of our diet. And then after that comes religion. All top five religions actually agree on one word, which is fasting. It's not even prayer, because you have meditation in some religions, but fasting is the common denominator. So religion actually carried fasting, over even when food became available. Right. And it was just up until the last 100 or 200 years where we lost this practice, or we kind of do it in a shortcutted way, and we feast after the fast, so we're not really fasting. And we lost that tradition, and now we eat multiple times a day. And you remember, you know, in the 90s, the big recommendation is eat small portions every few hours, which is, you know, today proven not to be an optimal way.
Promoted by the snack industry, for sure.
Yeah, and you end up just eating every little bit every day multiple times, and your body is just storing fat, your body is just growing faster and is aging at a faster rate, and this is why we see the onset of the chronic diseases happening at earlier stage in life. We see a lot of people now with cancer at age 40 and 50, with diabetes at age 40, and now childhood diabetes even, which is really a very serious issue that we need to deal with. So fasting really plays a great role into counterbalancing this unhealthy lifestyle. And the body uses it as a period to recover from the damages happening to the body. And we're going to talk, I guess, in more details about types of fasting and, right. And which one is for what. But you were asking me about our approach. So the USC, University of Southern California, specifically the Longevity Institute, has been receiving a lot of grants from the National Institute of Health to look at fasting and aging and to understand what is the ideal way of fasting. And there's a short-term fast, and we'll talk more about it, or intermittent fasting, but then they identified that longer-term fast, especially if you reach 5 days, is really important for fasting to not only help you lose weight and have metabolic effects, but actually to intervene at the cellular level and the way the cells function and actually even change some of the nature of the cells from existing cells to stem cells and push the stem cells in the body. And in order to reach 5 days, when we went to human trials, or when USC went to human trials and asked people to fast for 5 days, compliance was very, very low, as you can expect. It's so difficult for us today within this environment of food and marketing and deliveries and to have people fast for 5 days. So the Longevity Institute then thought about a way to mimic fasting with food. And the National Institute of Health and a lot of donors were very receptive to this idea, because not only it allows fasting to become practical now, but actually it makes it safer. You don't want a person who, you know, on a day three or four of fasting to feel a little bit, you know, to have a hypoglycemia or to feel a severe headache or weaning from food, etc. So the idea came about when actually the Longevity Institute went and is trying to do the cancer trials with fasting, and they couldn't really recruit people. And they tag team with Mayo Clinic in order to try to increase the recruitment rate, but it was very difficult. People could not fast for 5 days. So out of that necessity, the fasting mimicking diet was born. And they tried to look into what could be ingredients that we can feed people, and the body wouldn't really recognize these ingredients, or the hormones and the responses in the blood and then in the cell identifying the food are actually not triggered. So we call them the nutrient sensing pathway, or sensing the food signals.
So looking at insulin, looking at AMP kinase, looking at mTOR, specifically measuring whether those are activated or not, was that sort of the core of determining if the body felt it was fasting?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, the two most important, if you want, triggers of nutrition when you eat are proteins and are carbohydrates. And they go into the blood, and as a response to carbs, you have an insulin, you know, increase, and then a secretion increase. And in response to protein, you have what we call an insulin-like growth factor, or IGF increase. At the cellular level, these signals translate into different pathways, the PKA, the RAS pathways, mostly with the carbohydrates and sugar pathway, and the mTOR pathway, mostly with the protein and IGF pathway. So the goal was not to spike the blood response to food with insulin, insulin-like growth factor, and at the cellular level, not to trigger the PKA, the RAS, and the mTOR pathways. So the body would stay in a fasting mode, although it is gaining nutrients, and the fasting mimicking diet not only mimics fasting, but actually nourishes the body. So it has the macronutrients, it has micronutrients, it has vitamins, etc., helping the body safely move over 5 days and actually enhance the effect of fasting.
Yeah, very interesting. And one concept that I really like about the cyclical nature of this is, you know, mTOR sort of gets a bad name because we say it fuels cell growth and can stimulate cancer, but it also fuels muscle growth and allows us to grow and get stronger and prevent sarcopenia. So we don't want it suppressed all the time.
Yes.
We want a cyclical nature. So it seems like you've sort of rested on 5 days every 3 months is the general recommendation. But the trial that you did was 5 days a month for three consecutive months. And that showed a reduction in weight, a reduction in blood pressure, a reduction in glucose, a reduction in IGF-1, and was well tolerated. How did the transition happen from 5 days every month to 5 days every 3 months?
Yeah. So it depends on the patient profile, actually, or the consumer profile. If you're a person who you're healthy otherwise, you have a normal BMI, you're not overweight or obese, and you don't have metabolic issues that you want to intervene on. You just want to do the fasting mimicking diet. You know, the product name is Prolon in the market for promoting longevity. But if you want to do that regimen to help your body age healthier, and we're going to talk maybe a little bit more about how that happens at the cellular level, then you do it once every 2 or 3 or 4 months. So this is you basically counterbalancing every 30 months if you want your lifestyle, but you already have a healthy lifestyle and you just want to do it to promote healthy, promote the stem cells and do rejuvenation of the body. Now, if you have metabolic reasons to correct, if you're overweight or obese, or you already have unhealthy levels of, say, cholesterol or triglyceride or inflammation in the blood, you need to do a bigger intervention. So we recommend you do it once every month for 3 months. And here we're talking just 5 days in month one, 5 days in month two, and then 5 days in month three. And just once you see a correction in the weight, in inflammation, in the other metrics, cholesterol, triglyceride, blood pressure, and glucose in the blood, then you can start alternating doing once every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, and I guess that's what makes it so interesting is what's the right protocol for each person? Because let's be honest, people want the maximum benefit for the minimal effort. Yeah. So fasting can range from a 12-12 eating window, a time-restricted eating, an 18-6 window, a 24-hour fast, a 3-hour fast, a 5-day fast. They're all out there. And the question always becomes, where are you going to get the maximum benefit? And I guess the question has to start with, what are your goals?
Yes.
So if your goals are weight loss, if your goals are improving mental clarity, if your goals yes. are longevity and cell rejuvenation, it might be different along the way. So some people would be perfectly well served with an 18-6, and yeah. some people will need to go a little bit longer. Now, there are people who have success with a water-only 5-day fast, and part of that is you have to be very careful about how you break the fast. Does the same hold true for the fasting-mimicking diet, that when you break the fast, you need to take care not to sort of overdo it and overwhelm your system?
Yeah, so you touched on a few points about the goal and the short term versus the long term. So maybe here, if you allow me to take 2-3 minutes to explain the different kinds of fasting and what it does, what each does to the body, so that we
level
the
playing. I'm getting carried away and I'm going too fast here.
Yeah, this is wonderful. This is the hottest topic. I don't know if you noticed, but this May of 2018, the Food and Health Survey official publication showed intermittent fasting to be the number one diet in the U.S., especially among the younger population. So from being absent, actually, on any of the reports to becoming number one ahead
That's
of paleo,
remarkable.
Ahead of keto, ahead of other diets.
Yeah.
So it is the topic of the day.
Right.
But let's clarify, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of coverage on fasting, but then you see big headlines, fasting reverses this, fasting does that, and there are multiple ways of fasting. And fasting is just not one name that does everything. It depends on what kind of fast you do, you get different results. So
right.
I'm going to start with what you alluded to, which is a few hours of fasting, and or what people still call intermittent fasting, but it's not actually. If you fast less than a day, your body doesn't start producing ketone bodies and doesn't really go into biologically into fasting. When you fast for a few hours, we call it time-restricted eating. Because what you're doing is you're limiting the time you're eating, the window of time you're eating during the day. Say you just have lunch and dinner, and you limited, we call it time-restricted eating, because you're restricting the time of food within the window of just lunch to dinner. And then you're fasting during the night because you're sleeping, and say you skip breakfast. So this is what you called today a 16-8 or 16 hours of fast and 8 hours of food. Time-restricted eating is actually showing a lot of benefits, because at least what you're eating during the 8 hours, instead of just stocking those, instead of just pushing the body to grow, if you eat multiple times a day and be pushed by food, you're counterbalancing that by a period of no food and period where you allow the body to spend the calories that you at least ate. So it's a great counterbalance, short-term counterbalance to what you would do in the 8 hours of food. And it's actually showing good effects on maintaining healthy level of weight and other related metabolic factors.
And just to interject there, if you're already following a ketogenic diet, that can also enhance the state of ketosis as well. Because you mentioned that you have to go 24 hours to really be fasting and get into ketosis. But if you're already following a ketogenic diet, that's where that 18-6 or 16-8 can be even more powerful.
Yeah, definitely, and especially with ketogenic diets where you're still having a certain level of proteins in the ketogenic diet, and even more so if you have an animal source of proteins where your body is really not getting into ketosis because sensing the proteins and sensing the animal source triggers IGF and the mTOR pathway. So again, the ketogenic diet is a big word and needs another discussion, because there's different level of ketogenic diet, and some of them take really longer to get you into minor level of ketosis versus other ketogenic diet. But as you're saying, if you do the time-restricted eating because you're spending a good number of hours with no food, you're going to help enhancing getting the body into ketosis. Right. But here I want to say something which is really, I think, important for whomever is watching this episode, which is that we're still unsure whether you should do a 12-hour time-restricted eating versus a 16-8. You know, intuitively, you say, okay, if you last longer as 16 hours, it should be better intuitively. And this is what a lot of people are doing, again, called time-restricted eating, but intermittent fasting is what the street name for it is. But there are three major epidemiological studies showing that if you skip breakfast, actually there's some correlation of a slight increase in mortality. And the last of which is a study in the Journal of American College of Cardiology, which published a few months ago, showed a slight increase in mortality in the Spanish population that actually skips breakfast. Now, we're not sure if this is because they're fasting up to 16 hours or there's a bias, which is most of the people who skip breakfast, or many, I would say, of people who skip breakfast, they actually eat late at night.
Right.
So we don't know whether this was because, and the study didn't clarify whether these same people ate late at night or not. But right. A lot of us today in society that skip breakfast, that actually they stay late at night and they eat late at night, which is even worse. Than skipping or not skipping breakfast. So
they also tended to be heavier and smoked more, and there were definitely some confounding variables in all three of those trials.
So we as experts in the science are a little bit still unsure whether we should really go all the way to 16 hours, or we should say, 12 hours is where is a healthy time restricted eating. And honestly, I have one, if you want, basis that I always use when I make any judgment around diet, which is our body is what it is today because it was tailored by nature or existing in certain conditions for hundreds of thousands of years. So my first rule of thumb when I think about anything presented to me in terms of diet or lifestyle, I try to match it with how hundreds of thousands of years of our body grew under, what are the circumstances.
Right.
And typically, a family, say, 10,000 years ago would sleep when the sun is down, stay a little bit up, have some kind of fire if that existed. And then the next morning, either you save some food or you go and you find your food. So it's really, and you sleep for 8-9 hours, and then you wake up and you search for food and you have your breakfast. So I tend to say closer to 12 would be definitely healthy. I don't know if the 16 is healthier or not, but I tend to say, it's safe to do a 12 hours of food and a 12 hours of no food.
And that's part of the problem with when you talk about longevity, when you talk about fasting. We don't have the comparative studies. We don't have a 12-12 compared to an 18-6, compared to a five-day in the randomized studies, which, of course, is what we need to say yes definitively. So we sort of have to do the best with what we have, with N-of-1 experiments, with clinical experiments, with the observational studies, and just kind of put it all together and kind of make our best judgment.
I agree. And the study is going to come. It's such a hot topic. It's such an easy practice. This is the time-restricted eating or time-restricted feeding, when you call it in mice or preclinical trial, is such a hot topic today. I'm pretty sure there's going to be data, there's going to be science coming up on it.
That's why I don't like to use time-restricted feeding, because it makes me feel like a mouse, like I'm in a cage. I don't want time-restricted eating.
But in the media, it picked up as TRF, or time-restricted feeding, and we're trying to correct. A lot of my daily job today, actually, is to try to clarify concepts, because it's a delicate difference between a lot of different fasting, and then people use the word fast or intermittent fast or fasting mimicking diet, but then you need to go a little bit into detail. So for example, for the fasting mimicking diet, we have, not knowing whether you should skip breakfast or not, or whether you should eat something in the morning. Tradition and our mom tell us breakfast is the biggest meal, and then intermittent fasting now is saying skip breakfast. So what actually we have done, we have developed a fasting mimicking bar or a fasting mimicking meal, which then you can eat in the morning. You didn't skip breakfast. You get your nutritional ingredients for the day, but then you actually did mimic fasting for that meal. So we found that to be a balance between, okay, what tradition and what not skipping breakfast or what your mom says, and it balanced with what today we're all jumping on this intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating and trying to keep our, prolong a little bit the overnight fast.
Yeah.
So we called it the fast bot, actually. It's going to go, you're going to see it soon being out in the market. So that was the shortest term of fast, and which is a few hours a day. Then when you cross a day, when you reach a day of fast, you're really starting biologically to be fasting. And this is what really is called intermittent fasting, which has different ways of doing it. You can fast for a day twice a week, or what we call the 5-2 diet, which has been described in literature for a long time. And then a gentleman by the name of Michael Mosley in Europe tried to, wrote a book about it and promote it as well. And it basically asks you to eat 500 or less calories a day to, it's almost not eating. This is the way how you'd fast on it. And you do 2 days separate a week, say a Monday or a Thursday. And it is easier to do, relatively easy to do. And it helps you mostly from a metabolic standpoint. So as you can imagine, instead of having 7 days of full food, you're on 2 days, you're decreasing your food intake, and therefore you're going to lose some weight and you're going to have metabolic improvements as well for when it comes to cholesterol, inflammation in the blood, triglyceride, etc. And you would have to do it, therefore, kind of close to 8 times a month because you're doing twice a week. So that's the minor form of it. You can do a 4-3, which is now 3 days of fasting a week, or the most extreme form of it is alternate day fast, meaning 1 day you fast, 1 day you eat, 1 day you fast, 1 day you eat. This form, we're not sure it's even a healthy form. It induces in the body what we call the yo-yo effect. 1 day you're eating in full, the other day you're almost fasting, and it has impact on circadian rhythm. It has impact on your lifestyle. And as you can imagine, the body is a system of complex system of balances and homeostasis.
Right.
You don't want to disbalance that every other day.
And it seems important that the cyclical nature has to fit in there somewhere. And at some point, you lose that physiological cyclical nature, and the body just sort of sees it as being continuous. And I guess it's unknown where that level is, but maybe in every other day sort of crosses that line.
I agree. And a lot of diets focus just on nutrition, but we should understand the body is much more than that. You have this stress level and the cortisol, and you have the sleep level, which is another determinant for our well-being. So stress, sleep, socioeconomic factors and social connections and actually being active in society, these are all as important as nutrition and exercise actually to keep us healthier longer. So the alternative fasting, the alternative fasting, or what we call ADF, is still, we're not sure it's a healthy form. The 5-2 seems to be more practical, and it does the job of helping you counterbalance, from a weight perspective. And seems to be a more common, easily
right.
to be observed fasting diet. Then you move from intermittent fasting, which is again a day, or two or three a week. Then you go to a longer period, which is 2 or 3 consecutive days now of fasting, what we call short-term fast or STF. So when you fast for 2 or 3 days, yes, you're going to lose weight. So the common denominator of every fasting you do is to counterbalance weight and lose some weight or maintain healthy weight levels. So definitely when you do it, you're going to lose some weight. You can improve metabolic factors. But when you touch day 3, you're basically inducing what we call autophagy, meaning you ask the cells to, because now for 2 or 3 consecutive days, there's no food coming in or nutrients coming in the blood, then the body asks the cells to go and look for debris, intracellular debris, to eat and then, get the calories from and optimize the function of the cell. So now for the first time with fasting, you're touching on a cellular function. And autophagy was awarded the Nobel Prize of Medicine in 2016, which is really an interesting award to autophagy, which is linked to fasting. So we were really excited about that. And if you go longer than the short-term fast, the short-term fast also could have some inconvenience, especially and probably at the muscle level. When the body goes over the day and is really looking for calories, it doesn't only burn fat, but it actually goes and extracts calories from the muscle as well. And what happens on a short-term fast, 2 to 3 days, there could be a fat fat-driven weight loss, but also a lean body mass, potential little bit of loss. There's not enough in the literature for us to judge there, but this is always a suspicion because, as we know, when you need calories, you go to muscle and fat together.
That's why I think it's so important that people keep up some level of physical activity and exercise during fasting, although maybe not their usual intensity. So maybe we can get to that. I know I keep interrupting you, but we can get to that.
Yeah, definitely. In a shorter term fast, yes, it's your body is not depleted. You can still do exercise and just to try to, if not decrease the muscle loss, is just to keep it, to maintain it. And then when you go to longer term fast, which is close to 5 days, which is what mainly the Longevity Institute at the University of Southern California has focused on, they were very much interested in cellular impact of fasting. So when you cross the 2-3 days, it's like a company with no, with suddenly no funds. The body with no food is like a company with no money. And what you do in the first, if I delay paying a check to a company, they're going to just wait a little bit and then cash it afterwards. And then they're not going to take, the CEO of that company is not going to take drastic action to change the operations of the company. So this is intermittent fasting. You delay expenditure, you delay, you lose some little bit of weight and you spend a little bit of the calories that you had. Or what the CEO would have done would go to the bank and live a little bit on the reserves that they have, and you live off your fat reserve. The longer you go, like the short-term fast, 2-3 days, so the longer you go on a company not receiving proper amount of funds, then you start want to, the CEO or the leadership of that company start want to restructure the operations and optimize the operations of the company to do the best outcome out of what, whatever money you still have left. So this is where the body is trying to do the same, is asking the cells to optimize their function with the short-term fast. Now, if you go longer on day 4 and 5, if you're, again, going back to the example of the company, now you have to let go on the long-term, improper funding. You start letting go some of the employees and sometimes the ones that are not the most efficient. And you empower and you live off the critical employees who are the real, most cost effective for the company. And the body does the same thing. When you cross day 3 of fast, on day 4 and day 5, we're seeing, especially in mice trials and initial human trials, we're seeing the body actually pushing the stem cells. Every organ has what we call stem cells, which are young cells. They're there to what we know historically to help the organ heal from maybe physical damage. So if you cut your skin or you go into a car accident, you wait for a few days and you heal from that. So physical exercise, physical damage triggers the stem cell to kind of repair. What we did not know is that if you stress your body enough with fasting, the absence of food, on day 4 and 5, the body pushes the stem cells to try to replace elderly cells or cells with DNA damage. And the goal is to bring more cost-effective younger cells rather than carry a little bit of a dead weight at the cellular level now, not at a fat level, but now we're so stressed on a 5-day fast that actually we try to get off the dead weight from a cellular standpoint.
And so just to clarify though, wasn't the up to the 5-day fast where you started to, the organ started to shrink, you started to get rid of some of the cells, and then it was the refeeding where the stem cells came out and were produced, or were they already being produced during the fasting stage?
Yes, this is a great point. They started to be produced on day 4 and 5, mm-hmm. but then after you do the refeed, they're actually bringing nutrients to these new stem cells to even flourish at a bigger rate. But they start to proliferate at day 4 and 5. At least this is what in most mice trials we've seen.
So mice trials, not yet human trials.
No, in humans. Okay. So in mice, it's actually 3 days of fast in mice is equivalent to 5 days in human. And we have published an article in Cell Metabolism, if I'm not mistaken, 2014. And what it shows, we had 39 patients. It wasn't only a preclinical. We had 39 patients, and we showed a very high spike of stem cells circulating in the body, what we call the MSPC or mesenchymal circulating stem cells. So we did show that in human trials, and now we're doing a lot of trials on even diseases and fasting to show whether the stem cells on day 4 and 5 and then after refeeding flourishing, do they try to actually intercept or reverse a disease state? So we're really excited. We have 24 ongoing human trials now.
And 24. Well,
24, oh, actually.
Wow. And you already have data on multiple sclerosis and on autoimmunity reactions in humans, right?
In humans, there's one data coming from Charité University in Berlin, where they did fasting mimicking diet one cycle followed by Mediterranean diet and showed an improvement in quality of life in humans with multiple sclerosis.
Right.
Now we're starting trials on MS and multiple sclerosis where we're doing the fasting mimicking diet for several cycles.
Yeah. So you brought up a good point though, just there, if I can talk about it, that they were doing the 5-day fast followed by a Mediterranean diet. So does it matter what you eat the rest of the time? Is this a cure-all that you can go back to your muffins and your bagels and your donuts, and as long as you do your 5 days of fasting, you're good? Or what do you see the science saying there?
It does matter. There's no one size fits all when it comes to different people, different bodies, different needs, but now even more important, different diseases. So if you have MS, you're different than if you have cardiovascular disease, and you're different if you have Alzheimer's. So definitely... what they studied, which is one cycle of fasting mimicking diet and then Mediterranean diet, it was just to test the safety on a fasting mimicking diet and the feasibility. And then, coming from Berlin, from Charité, they were looking at the Mediterranean diet, which is very popular there and considered a healthy long-term trial. It wasn't really aimed specifically at multiple sclerosis. Maybe you can have the fasting mimicking diet plus ketogenic diet to be tried on such a disease. But it was a grant given for such a protocol to see safety on a fasting mimicking diet with multiple sclerosis, and then what could be a daily diet, which is a Mediterranean one that is mainly observed there, what the combination would do.
Yeah, there's such an emphasis on protein, too much protein, not enough protein, because we obviously need it, especially as we age and get older, that I would love to see that kind of trial with a 5-day fast with a high protein ketogenic, a low protein ketogenic, and see what kind of difference you see versus a more sort of Mediterranean diet, and see if there's a difference between those and what kind of effects the fast has in each person. I think it could be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. And the results are going to differ depending on people, their bodies, but also their objective. If you're an athlete or a bodybuilder, say specifically you want to build muscles, you go to competition, or you want to look good, you want to look puff, you are going to consume a little bit more proteins. It's not that we recommend it from a longevity perspective, but this is what you're going to do to push your muscle to grow.
Right.
And in that case, you want to do, from time to time, the fasting mimicking diet to a little bit counterbalance the effect of protein on your body. So when your muscle grow, this is something really important for public health. When you're over consuming proteins, you're pushing your body to grow. And the body grows... it grows towards its end. It grows, it ages. When you grow, you're pushing aging. And I always use this example, the big muscular athletes, you don't see them living to 100 and 105. And they actually, most of them, you hear about them, we'll lose them a little bit earlier than other, they don't become centenarians in most cases, if you want. And the body is biologically pushed by, they inject testosterone, growth factors, and they actually eat a very high level of proteins. This is really triggering aging in the body. And it's a very important discussion, I think, because we reacted to sugar in the 80s and the 90s because it led to diabetes epidemic, and we jumped on protein. Protein is another nutritionist, very actually serious nutrition component to the body, and pushes the body to grow and age the same way insulin does. It's not by chance that when you eat sugar, insulin increase, and then when you eat protein, we call the molecule that increases insulin like growth factor.
Right.
So it's both their growth factors to the body, and when you grow biologically, you're actually, it's like kicking the pedal in the car, you drive faster and you get sooner to the end. And what we are interested in our research is really how to keep people healthier longer and how to promote longevity and, more importantly, health span.
Right.
And so a lot of recommendations you see coming from USC and Professor Walter Longo and the Longevity Institute is how to help people stay healthier longer. It's not necessarily to look, to build muscle and be buff in the short term.
Right.
So yes, as you're saying, for some people you want to do, say, fasting mimicking diet cycles with ketogenic diet, depends on their goal, and others you want to give more proteins if they really want to build muscle, etc. So what I'm trying to build the point is different needs for different different people, and here you can tailor even further with the genetics and the microbiome and a lot of other details as well.
And age plays into that as well, because as we age, we probably do start to need more protein just for maintaining our muscle mass and preventing sarcopenia. So how does this fast factor in as we age, above 65, above 70, versus those who are 20, 30, 40?
That's a great point. And actually, protein intake varies, the need for protein intake varies throughout your life cycle. And we call it almost a U shape, where from age 0 to age 18, you definitely want to have protein. You want to give your kids milk and meat, et cetera, because they're growing, they're vertically even growing. Their organs are growing, the body is growing. And then after that, the more you age, the more you have enough cells in the body that are age enough or carry DNA damage enough that if you keep pushing them by proteins and during the replication, during that push, because they're age or they have damage, they are more prone to do a mistake and become cancerous cell. So as a mid-age adult, if you want, in my opinion, you say age 40 to 60 or 35 to 60, this is the peak of the risk of having high protein diet, but enough aged cells and cells prone to the mistake to become cancerous. But as you say, then when you grow older and you're 70, you're 80, you're 90, at that point, the level of cellular replication in response to food drops. So even if you eat the proteins, the cells are not, the mTOR pathway is not super active and doesn't push cells to high frequency of replication. So yes, you have a lot of age and damaged cells, but actually they don't respond to protein signals.
Right.
And this is where going back and having a good intake of protein is really important, because you need to maintain muscle at that age. The risk of cancer is not as big as when you're a mid-adult age. And we see this even epidemiologically. People don't die at age 90 and 100 from cancer. They're mostly cardiovascular and Alzheimer's, et cetera. The cancer peaks at certain age, but then starts dropping afterwards.
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see more data on that for sure. So as we're touching on that, then let's transition to say, who is this not right for? Who, you know, if people are going to listen and want to run right out and do cyclical 5-day fast, who would you say, hold on, don't rush to do this, maybe it's not right for you?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, the first fasting mimicking diets was a little bit less than two years, was launched in the market under the name of Prolon for promoting longevity. It's a box. You get it through your physician, or if you're healthy enough, you pass a self-assessment online and you can buy it. It's 5 days of food that gets delivered to you, and you eat it, and your body remains in a fasting mode. It is not for everyone to do. So definitely, if you're a pregnant woman, you definitely do not want to fast a baby or fast during the pregnancy. If you're very old, if you're really at an older age, like we were talking, say an 80-year-old, you want to have high protein diets. You don't want to fast your body probably at that age. If you're a child, not necessarily you're not going to need to fast, you need to grow. And we have cautions as well. I mean, definitely if you have allergies to some of the ingredients of the fasting mimicking diet, it is a plant-based natural diet, but some people still have allergies to nuts or to macadamia or to cashew or some of the ingredients. And there's a big, watch out in here. If people have diabetes, the diet is not, we have a lot of research published on diabetes. We haven't done the human trials yet, and a lot of people try to actually use it for diabetes. There's a big cautioning in here. Should not do it. You have a risk of hypoglycemia if you're actually using insulin or using blood-lowering sugar. So as much as we look forward in the future to further studies on diabetes, there's definitely a warning in here to not use it in this regard.
That's a great point, because a lot of diabetes medications are where we can get into big trouble with fasting in general, or even time-restricted eating, and then a 5-day fast for sure. So I like that you have it sort of behind the safety wall of a physician that has to be from a physician. And if someone wanted to try a 5-day water fast, I'd tell them the same thing. If you're on medications, do not do it until you confer with your doctor. I think that's very important.
Yeah. I mean, water fast has a little bit more warnings, because it's an extreme state of there's no food versus the fasting mimicking diet. So I agree with you. With water fasting, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. You have less compliance, and now you step into, if there's heat You don't want to drive on water fast, say, when high temperature, et cetera. So it's a little bit more extreme for folks who can do it.
If it's hot, yes. Is that just for risk of dehydration?
Dehydration and hypoglycemia, when your body is spending a lot of calories or if you do some kind of exercise, because you're really having almost no calories when you do water fast, pure water fast, you're a little bit more prone to safety issues.
Right, and then you hear these stories of people doing 3-4 month fasts, and it's remarkable. Not that we would ever recommend it, but just that someone can do it. Just the physiology of the human body is amazing that it can even do that. But obviously under very, very careful guidance.
Yeah, and I get this. I get a lot of questions about why 5 days, why not 10 days, why not, you know? And I, not knowing in the past, in my past actually, I have done a couple of weeks of fast and 3 weeks, and I just wanted to experiment with it, but I had no clue about the science at that time.
Interesting.
But what we discovered, why we recommend the 5 days, because you actually alluded at it, is refeeding is important. So instead of doing a long-term fast where even the stem cells trying to rescue the body gets depleted, because at the end you need to feed them as well. You know, everything gets shut down and depleted when you go on long-term fast. So yes, you have metabolic gains. You would not have, you would not be obese on a long-term fast. You're gonna decrease inflammation in the blood. You're gonna improve your cholesterol, but you're gonna lose on lean body mass. You're gonna lose muscle and bone density, etc. What we have found out in our research, because we have tested shorter terms of fast, which again we decided to go with the 5 days because of the rejuvenation happening on day 4 and 5. But then we recommend that you stop at 5, sometimes 6, sometimes 7, depending on the diseases. For autoimmune disease, we try to go longer because you do need to heal a damaged organ in that level. So the MS trials, for example, they would be for 7 days most probably, 6 or 7 days. But then the refeeding is as important so that you refeed the stem cells. So the cyclicity is more important than the length. And doing it cyclically multiple times and feeding the body again helps preventing the body gets depressed or depleted on the long term.
That's a great point. The cyclical nature, I think, is what's so important here. And there are definitely different ways to do it. But as long as you stick with the cyclical cycle and find out what works for you, I think that's a great point. Now, I know you're in hot demand here at the conference. I want to be respectful of your time. And thank you for coming to spend time with us at Diet Doctor Podcast. Any last words for our listeners? And of course, where can they go to learn more about you and El Nutra?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for hosting me today. I love this topic. I think I think University of Southern California and the researchers are bringing back fasting in a practical way. This is what excites me the most. Every day you hear about a different diet. Every day you hear about new ways of doing things. And a lot of it is fueled by interest or marketing dollars or businesses or revenues. I think for the first time in history of nutrition, or one of the few times where we're bringing back a natural phenomenon. We're bringing back a practice that was done for hundreds of thousands of years, initially for lack of food, and then afterwards carried by religion, bringing it back in a natural and safe way to our life. So I think fasting is here to stay long, and we're really excited to finding ways. We do recommend, people to do it in a safe way. And what we have focused is mostly on time-restricted eating and helping people go through that. And, intermittent fasting definitely has its metabolic benefits. And the longer you go in a safe way, and if it's unsafe with you, for you, you're going to mimic it with Prolon or other fasting-mimicking diets we're bringing into the market. So if people want to learn more about all this, the company that's considered, if you want the reference in fasting, is called El Nutra. And this is the company that actually spun off from USC and is trying to bring the fasting mimicking diet to the world. And if you want to read more on Prolon, you can go to prolonfmd.com for fasting mimicking diet, PROLON, prolonfmd.com.
All right. Dr. Joseph Anton, thank you so much.
Thank you
I appreciate
very much.
Taking the time.
Thanks for hosting me today. Right. Bye-bye.